Chapter 26 Memory. Jen awoke, inhaling deeply. He lay still for many moments, trying to dispel the fog from his mind. He felt hungry, but there was no pain or injury that he could detect. The struggle for control of his mind and emotions left him tired in spirit, but he felt unburdened, as if what had pulled him down for so long had been stripped of its weight. Pain for Raphael and Regina was still there, but overcoming the darkness forced him to put sorrow behind him that he might do his duty and find himself again. Memories of being crushed by the demon rushed back to him, and in panic he wondered if the Shalane, or anyone, survived. During the struggle within his mind, he thought he heard her call to him, and it was that call that awoke within him a need to live, a reason to throw off the despair the dark presence conjured within him. But still, he couldn't tell if it was real. The whole experience seemed like a nightmare. He opened his eyes and came to his elbows, finding himself in a small stone room, empty except for Ethrys, who was dressed in white as if prepared for a ceremony. He sat on a chair at the foot of the bed, face determined. Within his eyes, Jen saw a battle being fought. In his hand he carried the truth staff, and as Jen came to a sitting position, Ethrys rose and came to his side, placing the head of the staff on Jen's bare chest and pushing him back down. Jen was surprised at the mage's intensity, but said nothing, waiting for an explanation. "Hold there, boy." Ethrys stared into his eyes, searching for something. Jen, while feeling hungry, felt fit and strong, and he knew he could escape, save Ethrys's magic. But Jen guessed what Ethrys was about, for Jen also wrestled with what the demon had said in the chapel that night, and with what the dark entity that had sought to destroy him had revealed. It was a notion so preposterous that he had dismissed it as a trick of Mikik's to increase his despair. "I have sat here the better part of 2 days," Ethrys began, voice steady, "and 3 times I decided to kill you where you lie. No one would have thought it odd that you died, for you were close many times. But in the end I couldn't do it, at least not before I talked to you."
"You heard what the demon called me," Jen said.
"Yes. Torka bilek surmada ilk. Ilk madafengur eneako. Chak digat chak ilk murmicho." "I shall never forget. While it was the first I had ever heard the corrupted speech in person, its meaning was plain. You have left your master's way, Ilk. My creature is not my own. This betrayal will be punished. Death everlasting is yours." "The creature in the chapel that night was a Rukatam, a puppet demon of Mikik created long ago. The voice that spoke through it was the voice of Mikik himself. But you knew that, didn't you?"
"How could I be the Ilk?" Jen protested, ignoring the question. "I do not bear the mark of prophecy, and I've risked my life for the Shalane more than once. The Ilk is supposed to be some dark creature bent on her destruction. That is not me. I could have killed her and Shatan 100 times over by now. And that is why I could not kill you. But make no mistake, I will kill you and anyone who seeks to harm the Shalane. As would I, so you say. But listen well, you do not bear the mark of the unveiled moon upon your left foot, as written, but there are many scars there, so it may have been removed to hide your identity. The Ilk was to have no mother and father, but rather be a creature created by Mikik. You are an orphan. When the moon tris is unveiled, great power will come into the hands of the Ha'ulric and the Ilk. Their magic set against each other, one for good and the other evil. That latent ability is within you, Jen. I searched for it as you rested, and just as Shatan, savior of the world, will gain his magic on the return of the light of Tris, so will Jen, the serf orphan from Tolnor. But there is more, Jen, but you must now answer my questions under this staff, or I swear that you will not leave this room alive."
Jen lay back as Ethrys pressed the staff down even harder, pinning him to the mattress.
He could do little more than meet Ethris's stare, the magician's mind intruding upon his own. "Do you remember concealing the birthmark on your foot, or have memory of anyone else doing so?"
"No."
"Has anyone taught you magic?"
"No."
"Has anyone instructed you to kill the Shalane or the Ha'ulric?"
"No."
"Are you determined to fight Mikik and his allies?"
"Yes."
"Will you protect the Shalane with your life?"
"I have, and I will."
Ethris lifted the staff and shook his head in wonder, returning to his seat. "I do not fully understand how this can be, Jen, but somehow the prophecy has been turned on its head. The one destined to destroy the Shalane now protects her, with as much devotion as the Ilk was to have hate. It is unfathomable. Someone or something powerful has intervened in the prophecy through you."
"The simpler explanation, Ethris, is that I'm not the Ilk."
The idea of being the Ilk seemed so wild to Jen that he could not accept it. The fanged monster, servant of Mikik, searching the world to tear apart the Shalane, was not who he was, nor ever could be. Ethris ran a hand over his bald head.
"I think you are, Jen, for there is more. I said I do not fully understand how this could be, but I understand some. When the Shalane tried to heal you, a stupid thing to do, I might add, I had to enter your mind to try to pull her away from Mikik. In my search for her, I found something, I went to revisit later, as you slept. Someone of surpassing power has placed magical seals on certain parts of your memory, as if he wished to protect you from what was there, or perhaps protect others from what you would become if you knew what was there. The seals are meticulously and skillfully done, meant to be hidden, and only accomplished mages, of which there are few, would have even noticed them. They are warded completely against the sight of evil. No small feat."
"But what could they be protecting me from?
How could a few sealed memories have changed me from harmless Jen to the infamous Ilk?"
"Not a few memories, Jen. Hundreds of them. Things that you've seen, heard, and done that you cannot remember. We all forget things, so it would be difficult for you to find the holes in your mind, but they are there."
"There are holes," Jen confirmed, something Ethris said, tickling his memory. "I remember being visited by someone, though who it was I cannot recall. It's happened more than once, but I cannot remember anything specific about what was said or who said it."
Ethris rubbed his chin.
"There is only one way to know what was happening. I could remove one of the seals."
"Then do it," Jen replied without hesitation. "This must be settled."
Ethris nodded his agreement.
"I will do it, and I will watch with you as you remember. My reasoning says I must destroy you, but something within me senses a greater power at work, and I am reluctant to kill without great need."
Ethris laid his hands upon Jen's head, and Jen closed his eyes. It was a bright autumn morning. Jen was but a boy, having seen but 10 harvests come and go. The house was cold and the fire burned low. Raphael had gone outside in search of more firewood, though Jen knew there was none left. Raphael had told him he would teach him more about music that day, but the lesson would be miserable if they couldn't heat the house. Numb fingers could not play the lute, and for Raphael it was doubly worse. The cold stiffened his already aching joints.
"Well, boy," Raphael said as he entered, face angry, "it seems as if we have neglected the woodpile yet again. Jeston has gone to Sipton for the next few days, so we'll have to get some wood ourselves the old-fashioned way. Get your cloak."
Jen jumped at the chance to get out of the house. Most of his lessons required him to stay inside and read when other kids got to run around and play. He wasn't even old enough to be an apprentice, but Raphael had treated him like one ever since Pure Man Millersham had given the old bard custody of him. After leaving the house, Raphael grabbed the old, dull axe from the barn, fingering it and shaking his head.
"Well, Jen, It's going to be a long day, so while we walk, let's have a lesson or two. As you know, a bard must learn skill with words to say things in different ways to evoke different emotions. Take this axe, for instance. If someone asked why it took so long for us to chop wood today, I could answer as any other person and say, "My axe wasn't very sharp, and it took me a long time to cut the wood." A true statement, but a boring one. So, lad, we must spice it up. Make it humorous or tragic so that people can feel the levity or pain of the situation. Are you with me?
I think so.
All right, then. Let's suppose that tomorrow we're walking through town and that layabout friend of yours. What's his name?
Gant.
Yes, Gant. Suppose Gant comes up and says, "Hey, where were you yesterday? I dragged my lazy bones by your house to play several times and you were never there." You say, "We spent all day chopping firewood." Gant replies, "Well, what took you so long?" What do you reply?
Jen thought for several moments.
I would say, "The axe was as dull as Hubert Scholes's brain."
Raphael laughed.
"Very good." The humorous approach worked to perfection. Now change it so the answer conveys a more serious, sad feeling.
"The axe was as dull as one of Raphael's history lessons."
Raphael kicked him in the seat of his pants, smiling in spite of himself.
"Watch it, you little scamp. You show respect or I won't teach you anything and you'll be a rock brain, just like Hubert."
"Sorry, master."
Raphael continued his lessons on artful language, having Jen describe the dew on the grass, the golden and red leaves of the trees and various people in the town. In no time they were in the forest, hunting for deadfall among the fallen leaves at the edge of the trees. Raphael found a dead pine still standing. He removed his cloak and began to chop it down.
"Well, while we're here, Jen, let me tell you a little about this place, and it'll be your history lesson for the day. A long time ago, before the Shattering, this forest didn't exist. It was a grassy plain all the way to the sea, and its name was Ormat. No one lived on Ormat Plain. But during the First Mikikian War, the races of the world were driven ever westward, Mikik's forces sweeping across the land like the shadow of a dark mountain in the valley at sunset. Near this place, the elves and humans worked together under Aldredan Mikmir to build a fort against the coming tide of evil, throwing up great mounds of earth and using what little wood there was to fence it with. It wasn't beautiful, but it was strong, and when the Uyumark, giants, Gek, and demons fell upon it, the brave warriors and mages managed to drive them off. Many were killed. Blood, black and red, flowed freely. It was the first battle of Ormat, and the first victory for good in quite some time."
"Was there a second battle of Ormat, then?"
Jen asked. Raphael stopped chopping and leaned on his axe.
"There was. On hearing news of the defeat at Ormat, Mikik was furious and sent an army twice the size of the one that had been defeated toward the crude fort. When the elven scouts heard of it, they trembled with fear, and many considered fleeing southward for their lives. But to Ormat came a magician, Morin. Without even speaking to human or elven generals, he laid a great enchantment on Ormat, and when the armies woke, they were encompassed about by trees. It is said that everywhere the west wind blew in from the sea, trees grew, and grew quickly. Morin then confessed what he had done and earned the name Morin Treemaker. I can only imagine the confusion of the enemy when they arrived to find Ormat missing, engulfed in the great protection of trees. Undaunted, Mikik's armies poured into the forest, but in the wood the elves had the upper hand and slaughtered the first wave to enter. The Uyumark then sought to burn the forest down, but even as they tried, a great wind and rain kicked up, thwarting their attempts. The battle lasted for days, but in the end Mikik and his creatures were routed. The armies of the enemy retreated east, and middle peace began."
Jen looked at the trees around him with new wonder and respect, imagining the brave warriors running between the great boles and killing the evil hordes. Raphael leaned down and put his face close to his pupil's.
In fact, I bet if one were to look around and dig a bit, he might find a spearhead or even a link of armour buried here and there.
Jen needed no further encouragement, and with an eye to the ground began trudging about, searching for a likely spot to dig.
Don't go too far, Raphael warned. I'll need help carrying this wood. In a while.
The sounds of chopping faded as Jen walked about, kicking up leaves and pulling up rocks. Ahead of him he saw a hill with a thick copse at the base. In his mind's eye he imagined an elven archer in its darkness, waiting for a hapless Uyumark to wander by. And it was there that he started to dig. The soil was dark, cold and moist under his hands, but after several minutes he found nothing more than bugs and small rocks. Disappointed, he turned to leave when he found he could no longer move. Casting his eyes about frantically, he saw a figure, only partially visible in outlines created by the shadows between the light streaking through the branches. It was a woman, tall and slender, though her features were lost in shadow.
"It is time for your next lesson," she said. "When Triss is unveiled, you will be filled with power. You must learn how it can be manipulated and used. Triss is primarily the power to create and transmute. While you cannot do it yet, you will in time. Take this dirt, for example. It can easily be changed into stone by changing certain properties of it. Imagine the armies of the Ha'ulric and the Shalane marching proudly across a muddy field when suddenly they are trapped, their feet and their horses' hooves imprisoned in stone."
Jen trembled.
"But why should I wish to hurt the Blessed One or the Shalane? They are to save Kihol. That is what Pure Man Milishim says." "Remember you nothing of what I say? The time is too short to repeat the lessons. Through treachery, this world's god was stripped of his power. The Shalane and the Ha'ulric are a farce, a deception played by those who crave control. My master will free the races of this world from their bondage of ignorance and fantasy. While the Kihol lords the Ha'ulric and his wench, you know the truth. It will not be easy, but you must learn all you can. You must destroy the Shalane before the Milim Eri can again set their hand upon the world to turn it here and there as they wish. You are chosen for leadership, for power and a throne. While now you will be reviled, persecuted and hunted, when the truth is known you will be worshipped. Do you understand?"
"Yes," Jen replied, confused but cowed by the woman's vehemence, agreeing merely to silence her and speed her departure.
"Good. Open your mind. My master sends another lesson. He bids me tell you that dirt to stone is a simple beginning. There is so much more."
The method required to do the spell was burned forcefully into his memory. When the instruction finished, his head hurt.
"Tell no one of this," the woman continued. "You must remain a secret to all until the time is ripe, for no one will understand. They are all deceived, save you."
The personage faded, and Jen fell to the ground, weak and exhausted. How could the whole world have been deceived? They chanted praises to the Shalane and the Ha'ulric every day. Were they really part of some plot by unknown powers? Had they been tricked too? Why was he chosen? As he lay thinking, a robin fluttered down and landed beside him. Jen marvelled that it would come so close to him, but he shrank back in fear as it transformed into a being that awed him to behold. The towering figure had ears and a face, like the drawings Jen had seen of elves, but rather than being thin and delicate, he was strong and tall, taller than the tallest man Jen had ever seen. White hair hung loosely down his back, and his skin was so pale that it seemed that light came from it. He wore a green cloak open to reveal a cream robe, cinched with a belt that was fashioned from woven bark. Despite his fear, Jen could not help but think that he was majestic and beautiful. The being reached down and touched him, and everything went black. The next thing he knew, he was helping Raphael carry wood back to the house, disappointed that he had found no artifact of the great battle or fortress of Ormat. Everything that had happened with the apparition was forgotten, as was the being that came after. Jen opened his eyes. Ethris lifted his hands from Jen's head and sat down heavily upon the chair at the foot of the bed.
"It is extraordinary. They still live."
"Who?"
Jen asked. still worried that Ethrys might end his life.
The Milim Eri, what people commonly think of as ministrants. They were the elf masters and servants of the gods in ancient times. Their lore has long been clouded. They all but disappeared somewhere during the First Mykikian War, just before the rise of the human mages. The elves refused to speak of them, and few humans know they existed at all, at least with that name. But I have seen one now, albeit by proxy.
What do they want with me?
Jen asked, mind racing.
Isn't it obvious?
They still have a hand in the affairs of Kihal, which I count as a great blessing.
You are the Ilk, Jen,
but in their wisdom they hid the persuasions and teachings of Mykik, your creator, from you. Rather than grow into the evil instrument of Mykik, you have grown to be one of his fiercest enemies.
Ha!
Ethrys stood again, babbling in uncharacteristic excitement.
It is so perfect, so clever. Turn the enemy's weapon against him.
You will not kill me, then?
Eldaloth, help me now. I will not interfere with what the Milim Eri have done. In fact, I shall do my best to push it along beyond what they have accomplished.
Ethrys pointed his staff absent-mindedly toward the table, where new clothes, boots, and a sword had been set out in anticipation of Jen's awakening. Jen rose and began to dress.
You see, Jen, Shatan has had training in how to use Triss magic since he was a boy, so that in the day he comes into his power, he will be ready to use it in Eldaloth's cause. Mykik provided you with the same training, probably better, hoping that you could use it in his. But it is lost to you. While I cannot practice Triss magic, I can teach you the principles of it and point you to tome after tome of knowledge concerning it. You have little time to learn, but if you don't, you shall have no defense against Shatan. For rest assured that he has not forgotten the shaming you gave him.
Ethrys, Jen said, during my struggle with the poison, Mykik told me that there were many that would take my place. Will it really matter on which side I fall?
Mykik is a liar, Jen. Your defection is a deep blow to him and his purposes. You are a unique creature, if you'll forgive the appellation, and not easily replaceable. If we can keep Shatan interested in something other than himself for long enough, then there will be two powerful mages to fight evil instead of one. That there are many other powerful ones who have been deceived and who serve him, you know well, as do I, but he created you to be his servant and a powerful one when the time comes. The Milim Eri have seen to it that you serve a different cause.
Jen picked up the black shirt of his uniform, noticing the two small circles representing the moons Min and Duam, pinned on the collar opposite the usual sword Triss pin on the other.
What is this? Jen asked.
We were named Defenders of the Faith during our unconscious convalescence.
Jen saw the same pins on Ethrys's robe.
The sword, Jen, is a gift from the First Mother as a reward for your bravery. The scabbard is new, but the blade is old and has magical properties. To protect Mirel from undue protest and argument, I will tell you no more of it other than to say many would object to you carrying it.
Ethrys stepped forward and placed his hands on Jen's shoulders, forcing him to look into his eyes.
I hope you understand that what we have discussed here goes to no one else.
No one.
If anyone got wind of who you really were, no amount of persuasion on my part would keep you from certain and immediate death. And while I can see a wise hand in what the Milim Eri have accomplished, there is still danger. Prophecy has outlined your destiny, and Mykik may yet try to bend you to his purpose. We shall see if what the Milim Eri have done can rewrite your fate.
Jen understood, though he still couldn't see how he could be the Ilk, the Destroyer, the Slayer. He doubted he would ever fully believe it.
Now we should go, Ethrys said. The betrothal should have ended by now. If you are like I was when I emerged from sleep, you are strong, but starving. You can get something to eat at the celebration. Your presence will lift the spirits of several who have missed you, especially Fenna. I hear the girl barely left your side.
Jen smiled, for the first time in a long time. He knew Fenner had feelings for him, but his mourning for Regina had kept him from returning any affection. To discover that she had watched over him touched his heart unexpectedly, and for once the feeling didn't disappear into an empty void. That emptiness seemed gone, and he hoped his control hadn't left with it.